We're joined in studio now by Dr. Owen Fury, lecturer in computer science. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
What is computer science?
That's a good question.
I thought I'd eat up a bit of our time on this one.
Well, it's just, I suppose, how computation works through the interaction of machines and varying different ideas and how it can be done at, you know, a huge scale, which is why the biggest, most valuable company in the world now is one that NVIDIA, which does computer processing.
It's crazy, isn't it? The value of that company.
It's ludicrous.
When's
actually.
It going to pop?
Probably at some point. It's probably massively overvalued, but not only does it drive the AI revolution, it also drives all the cryptocurrency stuff. And those are the key ones. And that's why Taiwan is of such interest to the world too. That's one of the key reasons as well, because that's where most of them come from.
Now, there's an event taking place on Wednesday, the 26th of November, between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. It's at the Lecture Theatre at the University, the Atlantic University, the ATU Donegal, right? That's the Letterkenny campus, as we know. What's this about?
So this is, we've got a wonderful project that we're involved in. We have a real privilege. We get to work with lots of different areas. Now, this one is really kind of cool. It's what's called Healthcraft. So it basically, to teach kids, 8 to 12 in particular, about health literacy, how to be healthy. Now, there's a lot of work going on that. But the big twist with this is we use a lot of gamification. And particularly we use Minecraft. So Minecraft for education. So there's massive amounts of resources developed and whole Minecraft worlds to teach them to physical activity, nutrition, healthy sleep and healthy minds. And this is developed in conjunction with local schools, particularly Skull Columbkill, have had massive influence on it and partners in Greece and the Netherlands.
Just one awkward question. It'd probably be the last one. 8 to 12, we've had this big conversation about parents trying to keep their children off these devices and off especially these internet-connected games.
Yes.
Does this preclude parents who have adopted that approach because their kids are equally
important? Yeah, well, that's the same. I would be one of those parents myself, you know, and I completely understand. The challenge, well, one of the realities is these are what we call digital natives, okay? This is their world. They've always been using these things. And whether they play them or not, they know what they do. Now, this is possible to use at home, but the idea is that this is going to be used in class with the teachers, and the teachers are the experts already. But this gives them an extra resource in a way that can motivate the kids in a way they're not really that motivated.
And I suppose it's relevant to kids that are playing Minecraft at home, but it's just actually visually interesting for those who don't and not necessarily make them want to rush home and play it either.
No, no, not necessarily. They're, I mean, the kids, some of the kids love it. This is their world, basically. Mm. But they're used to it, and whether they play it or not, they all know about it. But the idea is that this takes things that they're actually, it's really, really important for the kids to understand this stuff at a young age. And they're sick of teachers and their parents and all telling them this stuff. So this gives them a completely different way of looking at the challenges they're dealing with or the target areas and, you know, helps them, you know, they love this stuff. Kids, they crave feedback and they crave, you know, interaction.
Who's your target audience for the lecture next week then? Is it educators?
Educators.
Is it parents?
Particularly primary school teachers, but anyone's. And they've all the schools in Donegal and Derry-Strabane area, Sligo, all notified about this. Hopefully they come because this is free. Mm. This is an EU project that is developed and we worked with, say, partners in Greece and Athens and in the Netherlands. And we've developed this wonderful resource for them to use. And it's been tested in schools and we've massive support, particularly from Skull Columbkill here in Letterkenny. Their teachers have tested it. They've trialled it with their kids. Over 400 kids has been tested between Greece and Ireland to find out what actually works. We can sit in the university and say, that's a nice idea. We need to talk to them. Yeah. They're the ones that are actually dealing with them. So this is an event to let teachers know how it works. It's not just the Minecraft worlds. There's also a lot of what we call these bite-sized videos. Their attention spans are short, particularly defined to get the key messages across, a massive teacher's toolkit, so to help the teachers to teach it, and then the Minecraft world is like the reward at the end.
What was that phrase you used? Native?
Digital natives.
Digital natives, because that is, and I wasn't able to articulate it as well when I was trying to say it, people are being born into this. Yeah. I'm of an age whereby I remember my first mobile phone. I remember when it became a touchscreen. I remember when Siri was introduced. You know, but like my youngest boy, he's born into this. This is just his world.
The world is for them. They don't know any different.
And we're not in reinventing the wheel because for generations, superheroes have been have been used to teach young people how to cross the road, right?
Yeah,
so this is innovative, right? But it's got heritage, you know.
Well, it has got heritage, and these things have been trialed for long times, and teachers know how to teach. They're trained how to teach. But this is using modern technology and an area that they're interested in to try and inspire them, because the whole area of gamification, it's huge. And as you say, we've always been doing this. But this particularly using Minecraft, like before we started this project, I didn't know. I just thought Minecraft was something the kids were playing. And I'm a computing lecturer. But there's a thing called Minecraft for education. And you can develop whole worlds and challenges that are worked out by the teachers to see, like, they're running along playing a game and they're dodging heavy foods that'll affect their sleep. And, you know, their puzzles, a wonderful one with they have to build like a seesaw or the base of a seesaw. But it's like blocks of how much screen time should they have, how much sleep should they have. And this is all going to have been previously delivered by the teachers in class.
And it's all
in
being
different
logged.
Ways.
It's being reaffirmed and it's being logged.
It is. And they're highly motivated by play. Kids love nothing more than play.
Of course. And I think we learn our best when we don't realise necessarily that we are learning. And you know, Minecraft in and of itself, actually, because there's so much violent stuff out there.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can sort of create violence in it, right, but not in any real sense. But it is incredibly creative.
It's hugely creative,
actually.
And it allows them to do it. It fires up part of their minds. Kids are naturally curious, and they naturally want little challenges, and they learn. And
it's Lego. It's Meccano. It's a remote control. It's a whole mixture of things all combined into one. But it's in a digital space, and these are digital natives. Healthy minds, healthy nutrition, healthy sleep. You've given me an indication there about dodging foods that might interfere with your sleep.
Yes.
So we can sort of get an idea as through in this environment how they are being taught information.
Yeah. So there's the videos, there's the teacher's toolkit, which has a lot of in-class activities, and then there's the Minecraft world. And they're all developed, with experts in different, some in the university in Greece, some in our university. We're working with the nursing department, with our own computing department. The project is led very strongly by Juanita Blue from ATU's research office, and pulling together so many different partners, getting them all to work together and actually translating what we think in the university to what will work with the schools is a challenge. Because we have nice ideas and they go, no, that won't work. Like, there's a really interesting example. We'd won thing there, our main character, and it's a panda, we call him Power Panda. And Power Panda's there, he's got a test the next day, and we had a line in the text said, you know, he wants to get 10 out of 10. And as one of the teachers says, don't say 10 out of 10. For a lot of kids aren't getting 10 out of 10. Just say I want to do really well. But even how the language is used and the impact of the teachers has made this wonderful. We come up with nice ideas that sound academically good, but unless they're actually getting tested, and this one is very
extensively
tested.
Well, they know the kids
tested.
Best, don't they?
They know the kids. Yeah. They know what will work. And they know
the
different
breakdown of their classroom.
Yes. And they're all different.
Yeah.
They're all different, but they all like playing games.
Well, all we want is for every child to maximise as best they can their own potential.
Yeah.
And it is different from every child. Well, and that potential can be in different spaces. It can be not even really comparable to another child's maximisation of their potential, because one might be an amazing with wood.
Yes.
The other might be a fantastic programmer.
Yeah.
You can't compare these people. You just want them to be the best in whatever they choose.
Well, it's to be the best they can be. And also the areas we have, minds, nutrition, sleep, physical activity, these are essential for everyone. They're essential for us as adults as well.
Yeah.
And we as adults, we're aware of what should be healthy habits.
Is there anything for parents as well to take home and sort of reaffirm this stuff?
Of course.
I was going to say there's no point. Of course there is a point. That's fine in the classroom, but if we're fully aware as parents, then we can use the same language or the same approach just to affirm the importance of eating healthy. You know, so we can say, you remember in that game, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So how do we empower parents and guardians then to build on this?
Well, parents and guardians and grandparents, they're the primary teachers of people, you know, and all of these resources are available for them as well. They're free. They're not just limited to schools. They can use this stuff in whatever way they want and try and emphasise the stuff that they're doing in their own houses. So everything here is based, it's all publicly available. There's no charge. This is what the EU funds. The EU funds wonderful projects. This is under what we call the Erasmus Plus thing. A lot of these are developing an area that needs help and working, putting people together and helping them develop it. So this is completely free. This is not charged. Like, you can pay a fortune for a company a professional company to do this, but this has been developed to be used with no charge. Sorry.
The interactive Minecraft worlds, what do they run on PC, is it?
They can run on anything. They can run on a PC, they can run on a tablet, they can download directly from what's called Minecraft from Education Platform. And, you know, there's the schools have this. You know, it's already there, and we give them help where we can to do this.
Yeah. Well, the beginning is the toolkit, isn't it? Because that sort of...
Well, it's very detailed.
Very clear, very quickly.
And there's a huge amount of work behind this. But as well as with this event, we have expert speakers. We have Pádraig Cannon, the principal of Skull Colm Kill, coming in. And we've a number of others. We've Danny Mooney talking about, the sports end or the physical activity end. We've one of our cyber psychologists, Dr. Jerry McWilliams. And we've Gabriel McSherry from St. Angela's, who's a nutrition expert. So those all coming together to help emphasise and show the teachers exactly how it's run.
But they also, I presume, have buy-in in this concept of education.
They do, of course. I mean, this is their world. This is their world, what they're doing, and they've got expertise. But translating that down to something, it's one of the lovely challenges we have in our job. It's not just delivering stuff at, say, master's level or PhD level. We have to be able to find the use at all levels.
Yeah, I think this is good. Some of this stuff can be gobbledygook, and can find its way down the chain. But this seems really good. It's really quite simple, but you can see how it
But it's fun and benefit. It's engaging for the kids. And that's the thing. And I'm fortunate I get to work in lots of different projects. As a computing person, we do computing for anything. Mm. But this one's so much fun. And you see their little faces and, they enjoy it. And it's actually, these are crisis areas that are really, really in difficulty for a lot of kids.
Okay, so if you received an invite, and is it if someone's listening and has every school been invited?
Every school has been invited.
But say, for instance, it ended up in spam or was
well,
it?
No, that's the thing. They can go and check, but they can also, I think you put a news item on, I'll put the link on there as well. And this is open to everyone. Any kind of an educator, anyone's involved, anyone who's interested is welcome to come and learn about this stuff.
It's not a secret club.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. It's for anyone. I know schools have difficulty getting out, releasing people, but if they can, we think this could be really beneficial.
Yep, healthcraft.erasmusplus.website is where there's more information there. And
they can contact myself or Juanita Blues is the project lead at ATU, and we'll give them more info.
Who's the project lead?
Juanita Blues. She works for our research
brilliant.
Office.
Okay. Yeah. That's Wednesday, by the way, this lecture. Wednesday, the 26th of November. If you can free up a member of staff to go along to the ATU Donegal Letterkenny campus, Port Road, Letterkenny, next Wednesday, 11 to 1 p.m. Yeah. Anything else you want to add? I think we covered everything.
We give them lunch.
Yeah. Well, now all of us, I'm hearing an argument in the teacher's room. Now I'll go.
I'm free. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Owen Fury, lecturer in computer science. Thanks.
Thanks very much for coming in.
Right now, I have three guests in front of me. Daniel Brown. Good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not so bad.
It's good to have you with us. Send a crack.
All quiet, eh? Thanks, mate. Right.
Adam Hannigan is with us as well. Adam, hello.
How's it going?
All's good. And Kieran O'Gallaghy. O'Gallagha?
Yeah, O'Gallaghy, yeah.
O'Gallaghy, I got it the first time. Right, so, Daniel, you are performing. Talk to me about what show's coming up here.
Yeah, so we're all part of the cast of The Band, which is coming to Angrian Theatre, produced by Letterkenny Music and Drama Group, and it's going to be on from next Tuesday to Saturday.
Yeah, and what's the story that you're telling in this show?
So while the story, it's a musical, it's basically, it uses all the music of Take That, and while it uses Take That's music, the sort of interesting thing about it is that it isn't really about Take That,
right.
It's more about the idea of these girls that grow up together obsessing over this boy band and sort of the shared experience of that. And whenever we first meet them at the start of the show, it's sort of based back in the 90s whenever they're children and they're, really following this band and loving them. And then they sort of drift apart over time and we meet them again then around 30 years later, sort of whenever the shared love of the band really brings them back together. And it's a really good story, I think. It's got that kind of, Derry Girls energy of that sense of friendship and family,
And it's Kieran, it's an interesting story then, isn't it? Because it's not, as we heard, it's not about Take That, but it uses the music of Take That.
Yeah, we're not Take That in the show.
You're singing Take That.
Yeah, we're singing Take That songs and we resemble a boy band, but it's not Take That, it's just kind of another form
and
of a boy band.
And that all becomes obviously in the so is there any correlation between any of you and the members of Take That?
No, I don't think so.
You don't adopt anything?
No, we don't adopt any of the characteristics of Take That.
No harm in that at all. Adam, I see you have a guitar here. I mean, I don't think you have to Take That to recognise that Take That make great music.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think one of the big things for me in this show is I never really appreciated their music until we actually kind of got stuck in learning it and actually paying attention to actually what's going on with the music, you know. But
and it is, and I think all the best shows are, they take you on a journey, don't they? You know, I mean, there's a nostalgia there, right? Of course, but there's the reasons as to why the girls regroup. There's a bit of emotion there as well, and it's friendship and all that kind of stuff, right? It's not about Take That, though. Let's be very clear about it, just in case. If you like the music of Take That, you can go. This is not Take That as such, but the music is in it. And I like that idea. I think it's kind of a quirky concept, isn't it? Right. How many? He's going to do one song for us or two? What was agreed?
Yeah, we've got one for you.
One, okay, right.
So you're going to have to get your tickets to come see more.
No problem, exactly.
Not to give them away.
And the show is on Tuesday, November 25th at 8 p.m. to Saturday, November 29th at 8 p.m. Tickets Tuesday through Thursday, 25 or 22 with concessions, I presume that means. Friday and Saturday, all tickets, €25, inclusive of a booking fee. And you guarantee people, do you, Daniel, a great evening out?
Oh, it'll be a great crack. Yeah.
All right, okay.
There's something for everyone, isn't it?
We'll have a wee chat just to reaffirm the tickets and what have you. But what he's going to do for us, do you want to set it up, Adam?
So this is a song called Pray.
Okay.
I don't know if you take that song, but this is one of the songs early in the show.
Yeah.
It's one of the best ones, I think.
All right, then. Well, whenever you
I'll not be playing it in the show, just to make that clear. There's a better band.
Okay.
Just dance this in, you know. But.
Do you know what actually is for... It is actually no harm in clarifying that, actually, because you're going to do an acoustic version. This is not the stage version, but you've given us a little bit. We'll give you a little bit, right? So it's an arrangement. All right, so this is The Boys, Daniel, Adam and Kieran. Three of the five, correct?
Right.
Three of the five band members in this set story. Okay, whenever you're ready.
a part of you again someday. All I do each night is think of all the times I close the door to keep my love within. I'm so cold and all alone.
Well done, lads. So they are part of the cast of The Boys. Three guys are cast as The Boys and appear throughout this musical. But the show itself, the band follows a group of five teenage girls in 1992, and that's a year resonate with lots of you listening. They're obsessed with their favourite boy band, and the music is inspired by Take That, though they're not Take That. And as often happens in your youth, your life revolves around the band, the songs, the lyrics, the posters, the dreams. But a tragic event pulls the friends apart, and they drift away from each other as they grow into adulthood. 25 years on, in the 40s, they reunite and they see they win tickets to see the boy band. So just like, are you actors in this, or do you appear as the music, or how do you, without giving anything away as such, because we're focusing on the girls, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. So the storyline really follows them, but we sort of show up throughout, sort of, I guess, to represent a lot of the emotion of it.
Of course,
yeah. You know, where it sort of ties the music into what's going on in their lives.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant stuff. Well, listen, it runs from Tuesday, November 25th to Saturday, November 29th, curtain up at 8 p.m. Each night. And it sounds like it's great, a fun to be a part of, and it sounds like it's a really good really good story as well. Yeah, and the music is great. But it's not about Take That.
It's not about Take That.
Maybe that's next year. All right, then. Thanks very much, Daniel, Adam and Kieran.
Cheers, thank you.
Anthony Skeffington is Ishka Aaron's Water Operations Senior Manager in the Northwest. He's with me now. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners, and thanks for having me on.
We are seeing our first spell of cold weather. It could be a precursor to a cold winter, or we could have a very mild winter. We don't really know at this stage, but our water infrastructure, certainly on our own property or leading to it, can be quite vulnerable to cold weather if we don't do things right.
That's correct. And before I get into that, Greg, can I just start by apologising to the community of Buncrana for the outage that occurred over the weekend. We do realise the impact that this had on us and the local community. There were a number of compounding issues that occurred at the treatment plant over the weekend, with some airlocking of raw water pipes. We had a power outage, and then we had a pump that failed, and that got compounded the effect of that outage. Our team worked, I suppose, tirelessly throughout the weekend to try and get back water as quickly as possible. So just to apologise to the communities, and a huge thanks to our own team. Just on your, look, just on the cold weather and the water supply preparedness for the winter and the cold spell, I suppose we're heading into that kind of colder weather now, and we want to make sure everybody in Donegal, the Donegal community, prepared and protected, especially when it comes to their homes and our, you know, the water supply that comes into each property. We want to try and prevent costly damage to homes, you know, especially with blow pipes and leaks happening then. And then, you know, a lot of ruin to kind of houses themselves, you know, where their floorboards have to be lifted or new carpets have to be got. And the stress.
Yeah, the line, your signal's coming in and out a little bit there.
Is it?
Right.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but what I might actually do, I'm going to just switch off the video, if that's okay. Is it just, it'll mean more resources are going to the audio. You know, there's a lot of advice going on in here. And one of them that jumped out at me is knowing where your stop valve is. Now, this is very much sort of inside the property. And I wonder how many people listening do know where that stop valve is, so that you can turn your water off completely into the property in that emergency.
That's a very good point, Greg. You know, there are two kind of controls. You know, one can be outside the property, you know, at the pertinence of the property, or where the public water supply meets the pipeline, the pipe coming into the property. There's usually a stop valve there. That's the first point. And then usually in homes, there's a stop valve underneath the sink, and that can control the, you know, the water supply coming in. So it's essential that people realize where those are. And, you know, to check them and to make sure that they're working occasionally, it's quite easy to do. So that's a very good point in relation to, you know, ensuring that you can control the water into your house.
There is this temptation, and some people actually fall to it, if they fear that the water could freeze, to keep a tap running to try and prevent that. I mean, obviously, I think we know why this wouldn't be a good idea, but I suppose from Ishq Aaron's perspective.
Yeah, and, you know, firstly, I think all householders and, you know, property owners should take some time out to insulate any spaces in the area of your home. And, you know, to constantly have a constant heat blowing through the house as well, that'll prevent any pipes from freezing. We don't recommend running taps or allowing taps to drip because that causes its own difficulty. If everybody does that, we'll basically run out of water, you know, and we are, I suppose, challenged, especially in the North Donegal area, with water supply, you know, and we need to protect our natural resources such as our lakes, our rivers, and our groundwater. We've had a lot of difficulty throughout the summer, you know, getting ensuring that, ensuring that rivers and lakes are recharged. You know, there has been a lack of rainfall over the last 18 months, believe it or not, over the last number of...
Yep. Unfortunately,
of weeks, there has been.
Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to have to do is we got the thrust of what Anthony had to say there, but the break in the line and then it catching up, it's making it very hard for listeners to follow. But the reality is these are the tips. Insulate exposed pipes and water tanks, fix dripping taps, small leaks can freeze and block pipes, service your boiler. How many of us actually do service the boiler, you know, routinely, or do we just wait until something goes wrong? So there is a logic to that as well. Know where your stop valve is, try and reduce drafts as much as possible. And you can sign up for free text alerts for your area, water.ie. And if I had more time, I'd have put it to Anthony that they can be a little bit frustrating because they might tell you that, right, we know there's a problem, but then the updates, perhaps some would argue, don't come quick enough, or it's not clear if this is a new problem or an old problem. And I think that's something they could work on. Any advice for this listener? Hi, Greg. I have a son who is 8 and who is obsessed with Minecraft, so much so that it's affecting him at school and homework, etc. Any advice? Like, I don't feel I'm qualified to give advice, and I'll open the floor out to other parents and guardians out there. The bottom line is that it is about as tough as it will be is limiting his usage, and, you know, not allowing him to use it until such time as his homework is complete, and only then for a specified amount of time afterwards, and maybe a little bit more latitude in the weekends. It's up to you. But he's, you know, he might have one of these minds where you think a lot about things. That's the way I was, right? I thought a lot about things. And he might be thinking about this a lot, and it could be interfering with him. Bottom line is maybe even break it up into 2 half-hours. You know, you can have half an hour after school, but then it's homework time. And if you get your homework done and eat your dinner, you can maybe have half an hour before bed. And then maybe say you can have an hour or whatever you think is right towards the weekend. The bottom line is there's no easy way. And certainly I think removing Minecraft from the child's life, or any game for that matter, could be problematic in and of itself. But it's sort of turning the game into a reward for playing outside or for doing the homework or eating din-dins. But it's not going to be easy, right? Because kids know how to control us, and they control us with tantrums and feeling upset and slamming doors. And I'm not saying that's what your son is doing, but that's what they're doing. That's their language. That's how they get around us, because they think they can break us down. Because if they protest and continue to protest, whoever gives in first wins. So if we give in first, they win. If they give in first, we win. But it's not easy. And that's how I would approach it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's there's more harmful games out there. If they do an hour or so at the weekend, no great shakes. And maybe, as I say, use playing the game as the reward for going to school, doing well at school, or what have you. But, you know, at certain ages, we go through spells where we think on about stuff like not school. I remember that. You know, I'd be sitting in school thinking of other stuff. It depends on your age. It could be a girl, you know, or a boy, or whatever it might be, dependent. Just stick it out, though. I think you'll be okay. And don't worry yourself about it too much either, too, because you can start fixating on it as well. Can you please warn other road users to slow down their speed, especially the lorries? I know a number of people who've been very concerned about the speed on our roads recently. I've passed that on for you. I've had concerns about the plastic from the lids of milk bottles leaking into the milk. I contacted the Food Safety Authority. They confirmed that it is plastic. Apparently, they don't publicise it's plastic or something is found in a product, but there will be a product recall. I'm not really sure of where the problem is because, I mean, the whole container of milk's plastic unless you get the cartons. I think plastic in its first use is okay. I think when you start reusing it, it can be problematic. But I don't share your concerns, but that's because I don't know enough about them maybe to be concerned. Right, Charles joins me now. Charles, I think you're going to sort of contest that we need to bring foreign workers into to build the likes of the metro and to meet our housing needs, etc. What's your position on this?
Well, I think there's still, well, a lot of expert Irish workers out there and they're all over the world. Why don't we bring back our own people to do it?
Well, what if they don't want to come back? They have lovely lives in Australia and Dubai and they're making a fortune and they're going to Bondi Beach every evening. Why would they want to come back and work on grubby metro in Dublin? We can't make
them. Well, we have the tunnel tigers back and forth all the time back home here to Ireland. But they work overseas and other people like that. They always look at an opportunity to come home.
So do you think a lot of people working abroad in construction want to come home?
They do, yes.
Okay. And how do we encourage them to come home, Charles, in your view?
Well, encourage them to come home. They have the facilities there for them to come home. When they're looking for a GP, they don't have to be waiting months to get a GP. They have that. They're putting other people in front of the Irish people that come home and people have to leave again because the service is not there for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, but are we not very reliant on these people? The people that that might be in front of you at a GP, as you would describe it, maybe they're the home helps from India or maybe they're 45% of staff in Letterkenny University Hospital. How do you separate the people that you believe are taking spaces for the Irish from those who are here living and contributing to society, Charles?
Well, the thing is, if they treat the Irish people better in the first place, the Irish people don't have to go overseas.
Mm. But we've been going overseas for generations. We built America. We built Britain.
Yes, we have. But we had 30 years now there when Irish people didn't leave this country at all.
Uh-huh. When was that in the...
And the country progressed during the Celtic Tiger.
Yeah. Okay.
People were forced to leave this country. Well, and they didn't want to leave the country, but they were forced to leave.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be taking in foreigners to replace our own people. We should bring our own people back.
Yeah, but that's not... I know where you're coming from, Charles, but there aren't the number of people abroad to come back and service the population and the needs of the state, if you know what I mean.
Like, there's 100 million Irish over the world.
Aye, but you...
All together.
Sure, everyone's Irish. You know, look in America. Most of them are here in Ireland, but they're not Irish, for crying out loud. I mean, they are Irish. Second, third generations, but...
I mean,
we're about
the hundreds of thousands of Irish or who are actually Irish over the world. Hundreds of thousands, not thousands, but hundreds of thousands of Irish that we can bring home to service our own country.
Where would they live, though?
Where did they live before when they left the country?
Mm. Well, they probably left because they couldn't build a house.
It's not that at all. They left because they economically they couldn't find a job. The houses were taken from them.
Uh-huh. So you believe that if we set this, the correct environment, there would be enough Irish... So just about, I'm clear, Charles, because I don't know you, I don't know where you're coming from. Would you be against the high level of foreign workers that are working in hospitals, for an example?
I'm not against any foreigners as such.
Okay.
But we have enough Irish expert people out there to do the job. And Irish trained people.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't have our doctors leaving after getting qualified. They should be here working for a couple of years or whatever, then they can leave.
So you would, as part of their education, would you compel the likes of nurses, doctors and teachers to have to work in Ireland before they emigrate?
Well, it's done in other countries, why not Ireland?
It's very controversial. A lot of people aren't for it.
Well, the thing is, give them a reason to stay in their own country.
Yeah. More money?
Well, that's the thing is that the cost has gone so high, they made it difficult for businesses to survive.
Yeah.
In this country, which is artificially inflated, a lot of stuff that's happening in this country. Mm-hmm. So we can pay Europe, because we've become a first-tier country since Britain left the EU.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only, I think it's only 4 or 5 years since we actually became a net contributor to Europe. Before that, we were a...
Well, we've been a net contributor long before that.
That's okay. Sorry, my time flies, you know yourself. Okay, well, yeah. We'll see if anyone, I presume people will agree with you,
well,
Charles.
Well, there's a lot of Irish companies overseas who are experts in a lot of fields like Golden Rail and everything else. Why not bring that expertise back home?
Because those companies will be able to bid for these major contracts. Obviously, as you would know, these contracts are tendered out across Europe, Charles. So if any of these big Irish companies in London or what have you, they can tender to build in their own country, in inverted commas, if you want.
That's the thing about it. They make things difficult for Irish companies to tender.
Mm-hmm. Well, BAM seem to be doing all right.
But they're not Irish.
Are they not?
No.
Okay. All right, listen.
The Netherlands.
Are they really? Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that. All right, Charles, listen, thanks for your time. Thanks for your opinion. And Charles is bang on there. There is an Irish subsidiary called BAM, but it's not an Irish company. It's parent company. BAM Ireland is owned completely by Royal BAM Group, which, as he mentioned, is a Dutch multinational company. And we became net contributors to, and time has flown, we've become net contributors to the EU, not in the 5 or 6 years, as I mentioned, but it's actually 12 years since 2013. I am so scared how quickly time is going. Right, now, Katie Tyrrell's with me now. Good morning, Katie. How are you? Oh, Kathy, I beg your pardon. Kathy Tyrrell, how are you getting on?
No, I'm Katie, that's right.
Katie, sorry, and it's been written wrong in front of me. My apologies. I almost started doubting myself. I shouldn't have. Now, we speak to you regularly, of course, and we would know that you're mum of an adult with autism, and you're concerned about gaps in consent, sexual consent education a report has found that there are significant gaps in sexual education for autistic people in Ireland. Is that something that worries you?
There are certain aspects of it that worry me. First of all, Greg, I want to say that the sex education that my 23-year-old got in special school, I was quite pleased with.
Okay.
But you've got to remember that if you're talking about adults and the education, at that time we were still under the guise of the Lunacy Act, of 1871, okay? And that bill, the Assisted Living Making Bill, only came into fruition in 2023, okay? So in regards of the Lunacy Act, say if your child had said that someone had touched them...
inappropriately.
Not in an appropriate manner, yeah. If it went to court, their evidence would have been completely dismissed because they were not of sound mind. Mm. So they couldn't point out their accuser, right? The person they're accusing, because they would have said, no, actually, they're a lunatic, so they don't know what they're saying. And that was only revoked in 2023. So a lot of this education took place in the background of the Lunacy Act.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are not aware of that. So say if someone who had a learning disability and was gay, yeah, if they took part in a homosexual sex act consenting,
yeah,
under the age of 21, they could have been imprisoned.
Is there a gap too then between sex education for people with autism in special schools and mainstream schools?
I think there is, to a certain extent, because special schools already have the mindset of how to teach this.
Yeah.
Where in a mainstream setting, the teacher sticks to the guidelines from the department, which is all fine. But you need to be able to explain this. And then you've got people that are non-verbal. So how do you... You have to adapt your program to fit the needs of the person, yeah? And the other thing is as well, is we always talk about consent in the background of the person with the disability consenting to a sexual act, yeah? We also have to focus on the individual and say, this is not appropriate behaviour. As well, going the other way.
Yeah,
you know
exactly. So, in other words, if I have autism, am I able to properly consent to an act or a situation that I'm involved in? But also, can I properly ascertain if the person that I might be engaging with is consenting themselves?
Yes. Mm. So you've got it's a two-way thing, and we need to teach that. And as parents, we do as well. You know, you have to say what's appropriate and what's not. I'm really pleased in that. See, and then there's the other thing about consent, which is sometimes quite confusing for the individual. So my son knows that it's not correct for him to have his private parts on show and whatever. And he says, you know, don't look at me. I have to still bath him, right?
Yeah.
And shave him.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's accepting of mummy doing that, okay? But then sometimes a doctor might want to look at him and I have to say, look, mummy says this is okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's complex, so isn't it? Yeah.
It's very, very complex,
yeah.
You know. Recently we've had an issue involving an area of his body where he would have to strip off and, you know, I've had to keep saying, this is okay. This is a doctor. A doctor can ask this. But then you've got a situation. What about if you come across the wrong type of doctor? I've never have and hopefully never will.
I know what you're saying. But is there a way for a person similar to that you're talking of to be educated enough to make those decisions without you sort of being the guiding hand in relation to that? So the reassurance that this situation is appropriate, that situation is appropriate. Are some people's needs such that really would be very difficult to be able to weed that out, if that makes sense?
I think it is difficult, Greg. I do think it's difficult. And I've just outlined how difficult it can be.
Sure.
And then, as you know, I've had this conversation with you privately and on the radio. The one thing that's always in the back of my mind, because we are both the youngest siblings in our family, is Jimmy will end up in residential care at some point in his life. And then you have to hope and pray that things are all going to be good and, you know, that the individuals that are charged with their care are not going to take advantage. But then they also, because they have to have trust in an individual to say, look, this is okay that, you know, Dr. Smith wants to look at you, or, you know, we need to find out what's going on. It's a really, it is complex and there are gaps. Do I have the answer? No, I don't.
But I suppose, too, what we have to ensure, right, because there's always going to be cases, isn't there, Katie, because it is a spectrum, it's that we ensure, I suppose, that we are nuanced enough to understand that, right, maybe in a mainstream school where the information will be relevant and will land, that we have it there and we understand we can teach it in a different way, and to make sure that your experience in the school that your son attended is universal. And I think if we do those two things, and then that will catch maybe the majority, and then see what else we need to do then for others. Okay, listen.
I think,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, maybe the NCSE could have a team going round mainstream schools, and it's something that maybe could be taught in resource hours
for
those children that are being educated in mainstream successfully. But
common sense suggestion. Thanks as always. Really appreciate your time, and we'll chat again really soon. That's where we have to leave it today. We're live tomorrow from Cope Builder Providers. It's their open day. We'll tell you all about what's going on there. We will have the Friday panel, though, in the show as normal, but we have some great guests and information for you live from the Cope Builders Providers in Dunloe. So if you're around, call in and say hello.